This is Red Ice Radio, a beacon of sanity from Northern Europe. RedIceCreations.com.
All right, welcome, friends. I'm Henrik, and you are listening to Red Ice Radio. As the year is beginning to come to an end, we are going to have some closing thoughts on the galactic alignment, the Mayan calendar, and the monuments referencing 2012. These are all ideas and theories that we've been following with interest throughout the year, so we are, of course, going to be part of this closing, if you will. John Major Jenkins is an independent researcher who has devoted himself to reconstructing ancient Mayan cosmology and philosophy. Since the beginning of his odyssey of research and discovery with the Maya, John has authored dozens of articles and many books. As a spearheading researcher, he is best known for his works that theorize certain astronomical and esoteric connections of the calendar systems used by the Mayan civilization of pre-Columbian Mesoamerica. In the first hour, he's going to present his galactic alignment theory, covering the cosmic mythology associated with the sun's alignment moving to the place of rebirth at the center of the Milky Way. Right, welcome back to Red Ice Radio, John. It's great to talk with you once again. Thank you for being here with us so close to the end date, as it were. So thank you for your time today. Appreciate it.
I am happy to be here.
Excellent. I know you have... of course, many new items that we want to discuss and you want to share with our audience. Quite some interesting developments on this, of course. But John, maybe first we can just, since we're pretty much on the date now, about 2 weeks away, I thought as an introduction for those who are new to this program and your work, before we get to the new stuff, that we could just return and maybe if you can condense, if you will, for us and remind us again about your main body of your work, the galactic alignment theory. So maybe you can just share with us, what is it? How did you discover it? Of course, when it's taking place. And then later we can talk about what you believe that it all means, John. So please go ahead.
All right. Well, first it's important for listeners to understand that 2012 is a true artifact of the ancient Maya calendar system. There is a lot in the marketplace that sort of takes a freewheeling approach to it, and there's a lot of inventive ideas and models that have been attached to it. But my whole approach going back to the 1980s has been to reconstruct what the ancient Maya actually thought about this date. And my early travels going to Central America many times over a period, I'm still going to Central America, but that first those first couple of trips to Guatemala really inspired me living and working with the Maya people, and it made me want to understand more deeply the ancient Maya civilization. So, I was doing my own research in the 1980s and early 90s and sort of finding the edges of what scholars were able to say about some of these more enigmatic aspects of the ancient Maya world. And one of these came up pretty early on for me, and it was the 2012 period ending date in the long count calendar. This is the end of 13 baktuns, which is a period of 5,125 years. And scholars pretty much knew that the 13 baktun cycle was scheduled to reach its completion point on December 21st of 2012. This specific date comes from the correlation of the Maya calendar with the our Western calendar, which is pretty much settled by the 1950s. There's still some controversy about that. We can get into that if you want. But I looked at the correlation question. That was sort of my entree into doing sort of deeper investigation of these aspects of the ancient Maya world was the correlation.
Yeah.
And I pretty much determined for myself by the early 90s that, yes, indeed, this correlation that makes the 13 baktun cycle end on December 21st of 2012 is the best one that's supported by all of the evidence. So even before I got into the 2012 research, I had that correlation sort of confirmed. And I noticed, of course, that, well, that's the solstice. And it was interesting, you know, because I was wondering why this date would have been important in the ancient Maya calendar system. I mean, this long count calendar system is a system that was put in place over 2,000 years ago. I mean, the earliest dated monuments in the long count calendar come from the first century BC. So it was all sort of fixed into real time at that point. And then the consequent 13 Bakhtun cycle ending December 21st, you know, I scratched my head about that and I wondered, well, I wonder why the Maya picked this date, because, you know, it seemed like the solstice suggested that it was an intentional choice, intentional placement. And so I started investigating the astronomy, and by the early 90s, I hit upon what I felt was the key to understanding this date, and it has to do with a rare astronomical alignment that has been called a galactic alignment, a solstice galaxy alignment. It's what I refer to as my 2012 alignment theory, and this alignment is something that's caused by the slow wobble of the Earth on its axis. This is called the precession of the equinoxes. And one of the effects of this phenomenon is that it causes the position of the sun on the equinoxes or the solstices to slowly shift in the sky. And periodically, over long intervals during this precessional cycle, the sun on the solstice will come into alignment with the bright band of the Milky Way galaxy. And all of this, of course, is as viewed from Earth. It's from the vantage point of what the ancient Maya naked eye sky watchers, such as the Maya, were looking at and potentially tracking.
Yeah.
So these were some of the early clues that I was working with. And the fact is that the galactic alignment, you know, it is a fact of astronomy. It needs to be carefully defined, and I've offered definitions of it over the years. There's various parameters and you know, ways to talk about the galactic alignment. But the question for me, by the way, also, the galactic alignment is, in fact, happening in the years around 2012.
Yes.
So this is an alignment that astronomers know about and have calculated. And so it's real astronomy. And with this connection to the time period of 2012, of course, one has to think, well, that's really amazing. Could it be that the ancient Maya chose their December 21st, 2012 cycle ending date to target this galactic alignment? Well, that was the big question. And not wanting to just sort of make a general association or assertion that it was true. Instead, what I did is I investigated the Maya traditions. And in fact, I found evidence that the galactic alignment is embedded into basic Maya institutions like the creation myth, the ball game symbolism, king-making rites. And all of my work in the 1990s on this question was based upon examining the site called Izapa. Izapa is an early Maya site. It actually belongs to a transitional culture between the older Olmec civilization and the emerging Maya civilization.
Mm-hmm.
The Izapa culture was basically thriving between 400 BC and 100 AD, right at the time when the first long count dates appear. And my clue actually came from scholars like Michael Coe and Vincent Malmstrom, who had suggested that it certainly seems like the Izapa civilization was responsible for the formulation of the long count. They weren't particularly interested in the 2012 date question or examining Izapa for any evidence for how the ancient Maya thought about 2012, but that's exactly what I started pursuing. So the very get-go, the very, you know, beginning of my pursuit began with the logical assumption that Izapa was going to possibly tell us something about what the the people who created the Long Count calendar thought about 2012. So my galactic alignment theory, basically should be, it should be thought about as focusing on the evidence that the ancient Maya did indeed choose this galactic alignment, they chose the 2012 date to target this galactic alignment. So my there's several, I always see these assumptions when I read critics of my work, and they seem to assume that I believe that my theory is basically proposing that when the galactic alignment happens, something is fated or predetermined to happen to humanity or
right.
the Earth or
yeah.
something like that.
Yep.
I don't think about it like that. I don't think the ancient Maya thought about it like that either. We can get into some of that a bit later, but all of that was put out in my book, Maya Cosmogenesis 2012, which my friend Terrence McKenna wrote the introduction to in 1998. And after that, there was a follow-up book called Galactic Alignment. And my work's continued in various books and articles. And, one thing about this is that, it should be said that professional Maya scholars in the 1990s were not treating 2012 as a serious topic of investigation at all.
Yeah.
At best, it was just a laugh track. It was like a joke or something. And so when this inscription from a site called Tortuguero became widely known in 2006, and scholars started to think about 2012 seriously, that shifted the whole game. And in fact, just briefly in a nutshell, we now have a second 2012 inscription from another site. And I can say that when you look at the evidence that is provided by these two inscriptions, it's actually supporting the 2012 alignment theory that I proposed almost 20 years ago.
Right, very good. Let's talk briefly about, I guess, the components that are part of the alignment. I know that there's some people out there who still believe that there are also planets that are going to line up with this. Is that true? Can you deconstruct that for us?
Sure. Yeah, that's one of the sort of misconceptions or inaccurate ways of talking about the galactic alignment. It's not an alignment of planets. The thing that shifts in the sky with precession is the position of the December solstice sun. So, like 3,000 years ago, the position of the December solstice sun in the sky was some 35 degrees away from the bright band of the Milky Way. And it's been slowly converging and with the Milky Way. So in the years around 2012, and you have to say in the years around because it's inappropriate to nail it down to one particular year. I mean, it's such a slow process that one has to, logically talk about it as a range.
A period.
And that is something that I suggested and put on the table. But, we can sort of minimally talk about perhaps a 36-year range for the alignment as the body of the sun on the solstice shifts through the precise midline of the Milky Way called the galactic equator. So the components of the alignment involve the galactic equator, or generally the Milky Way itself, the bright band of the Milky Way. The place that the December solstice sun will be lining up with is between Sagittarius and Scorpio, of course, along the ecliptic path of the sun, moon, and planets, because the sun is shifting along the ecliptic. So the ecliptic makes a cross with the Milky Way, and this is the Great Cross, or it's actually the sacred tree or the cosmic crossroads that is referred to in the Maya creation as the Popol Vuh, or the hero twin mythology. And the translator of the creation myth, Dennis Tedlock, he points these things out in his notes. And so the crossroads is an important feature in the Maya creation myth. And the December solstice sun is going to be positioned right dead center in the cosmic crossroads. That's very, very significant because it helps us understand how they would have been thinking about this alignment. It's like a return of the sun deity to the throne in the sky. Crosses represented the cosmic center.
Yeah.
And a king was enthroned on the symbolic center of the cosmos. There's another feature right there, though, that's very important. It's called the dark rift in the Milky Way. It's caused by interstellar dust. It's visible to the naked eye. The Maya mythologized it as the Xibalba Bay, the road to the other world. But there's a whole complex of sort of mythological meanings attributed to it. It could be like the mouth of the cosmic Milky Way monster. It could be the birthplace of the cosmic mother, if the Milky Way is thought of as the cosmic mother deity. It could be thought of as the goal ring in the cosmic ball court. So there's all this complex of meanings, but generally it is a place of rebirth. I think that's sort of the implication of the alignment, is that the sun is coming into a place of rebirth. And of course that makes sense, because 2012 is a period ending, and there's a whole tradition around period endings and how they're really about transformation and renewal or rebirth. And, you know, there's not like a apocalyptic doomsday concept going on in these traditions. So the components of the galactic alignments, are front and center in the Maya traditions, in the creation myth, in the ball game and kingmaking rites. And that's really the core of my, 2012 alignment theory. You know, it's not some astrological proposition about how, I mean, part of that's an interesting thing to explore from a scientific point of view. I mean, do these types of alignments actually do empirically cause change on Earth? We don't really know. I'm open to that. I'd like to see some research around that, but it's not really required for my theory.
It's not a Charles Hapgood crustal displacement theory that touches upon into this work, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I don't really go there with it. There might be linked connections going on. Certainly we know that the precession of the equinoxes, it's been shown, you know, the Milankovitch theory, it's been shown that the precessional cycle, which is 26,000 years, is really, it's involved in the advent of ice ages and the ice age cycles.
Yeah.
It's not as simple as, you know, we get an ice age every 26,000 years. There's
more
complex factors involved, but I think we are linked up to these larger cycles and processes. But the point is that my 2012 alignment theory is not coming from that point of view. What I'm trying to do is merely reconstruct and present the evidence that the ancient Maya did indeed intend their 2012 date to target this alignment.
Very good. And so the alignment is connected with the precession cycle. So it happens, well, roughly then every 26,000 years or so. And this is what the Maya was targeting. If we go back when they were most active, or let's say when they came up with this concept, do you think that they simply looked at the movements, what they could see from year to year, and then calculated roughly when this was about to take place again, this the closing of the cycle, if you will?
Yeah, I think it would have been the effort of a fairly sophisticated astronomy, but nothing more sophisticated than what the ancient Greeks were doing around the same time. I mean, Hipparchus, the Greek astronomer who's credited with discovering precession, was using star data that was only 140 years old. And with that, you could get you know, a 2-degree estimate for precession, and then you could extrapolate the full circle from that. But it seems like the way that I picture this, based upon my research at Azapa, which I believe is the place that, you know, formulated this entire cosmology or paradigm with the long count calendar, and the creation myth that sort of goes along with it, is that the ball court at Azapa lines up with the December solstice sunrise. This is something I discovered in my work and published in the 1990s. So you could imagine the sky watchers sitting in the ball court waiting for the December solstice sun to rise. And in the pre-dawn hours before the sun rose, the Milky Way would rise and would be arching over the southeastern horizon. So if they were taking star data or positions or rise times, then if they were to watch this over a period of, you know, 200, 300, 400 years, they would notice that the Milky Way and the December solstice sun were drawing closer and closer together. You know, the realization that these two compelling astronomical features were moving closer and closer together would have obviously given rise to an interest and an excitement, and sort of like they would be confronted with the fact that at some future date, Father Sun, the December solstice sun, would be converging with the heart of Mother Galaxy. And I say that because the place along the Milky Way that the sun is lining up with in 2012, you know, I mentioned earlier that it's the crossroads and it's the dark rift. Well, all of that is within the nuclear bulge of the galactic center.
Yeah.
So that was, I've actually proposed years ago that that would seem to be like the womb of the Great Mother. And we now have some interesting evidence with a great ruler of the Maya named Lady Cabal. Her tomb was discovered and announced only about 6 weeks ago. And we have a carving that shows her with a prominent spondylus shell as a belt laying over her her belly, her midsection. And we know that the spondylus shell was thought of as representing the generative organs of women, you know, the womb. And the rulers also represented the Milky Way. So here we have evidence for the idea that the Great Mother ruler deity was representative of, you know, her womb was like the center of the Milky Way. I guess that's something else we could sort of talk about in more detail later. But it's just astounding how in recent years there's been so much confirmation for the ideas that I was putting on the table some 15 years ago.
Indeed, there's a lot of interesting things that have come out. I want to talk more about that Lady Cabal that you mentioned. And also, just to tie this back again to remind people a little bit here, then we're talking about the precessional cycle. It effectively, in this way, then, is connected to 2012. And then we have people like Sri Yukteswar, who connected the Yuga cycles even with the precessional cycle and kind of calculated in the ending of, I guess, the Kali Yuga around this point as well. I don't know if that's something you would agree with, but if we zoom out and look at the bigger picture here, what do you think that it does mean and represent, and what do you think that it meant to the Maya? Are you trying to align yourselves as much as possible with what they thought about this, John, or what you found? Does it differ from what you personally believe?
Yeah, I think it is important to sort of zoom out and look at the bigger picture of this. The idea that other cultures were tracking these things, that's something I pursued in my Galactic Alignment book, which came out 10 years ago. That was sort of the follow-up book to Maya Cosmogenesis 2012. So I'm very interested in the larger understanding of these things. One of the things that I've tried to put on the table is that the Maya understanding of time might just be, you know, a profound insight into the nature of time, something that's not just a belief system of a forgotten people, that it actually has meaning, that they discovered something about the nature of cycles and this galactic alignment that may indeed have something to do with the cycles experienced by human beings on Earth. Now, this could be criticized as some kind of astrology, but the fact is that we are embedded in the larger energy field of the universe, and there's all kinds of cosmological events that go on that affect us here on Earth, you know,
sure.
Call it whatever you want to call it. But that general insight that is so often criticized as some kind of astrological pseudoscience is itself actually a profound non-dual understanding of reality that you find in, say, ancient Vedantic teachings, Many of the ancient, like Oriental mysticism, for example, take it as a truism that everything is interdependent. And that basically is the core of the non-dual philosophy. You know, the subjective realm and the objective realm unfold in tandem because they both spring from the same transcendent root and source point. And so the non-dual philosophy that I believe was the core of Maya metaphysics, or the Maya understanding of time and reality, is an understanding of reality that is often derided by scientific materialism, which tends to work, you know, well enough on a sort of a limited realm of physics or something like that. But I think there's this larger metaphysics that includes physics, but takes this, you know, zoomed out position, as you say. And from that point of view, then, we can see that the insights that are being reconstructed among the ancient Maya civilization are actually profound teachings, you might say, spiritual teachings or perspectives that modern people could benefit from studying or embracing even. And this sort of position is heresy among scholars. You know, it's kind of like the way that the great mythologist Joseph Campbell, you know, he was a guy that looked at all of the world's traditions, and he was able to look beyond the superficial cultural characteristics and identify the deep archetypal core of these traditions. And as such, he was able to identify the essence that was shared among all these diverse traditions. And because of that, he also advocated that the teachings he was elucidating could be beneficial for modern human beings. And he was criticized for that. I'm sort of doing the same thing with the Maya. You know, I believe that for us to meditate upon the truth of non-duality is something that we could all benefit from. I guess from a more sort of down-to-earth position, you know, the Maya did have an expression of what they believed happens at cycle endings. In the Maya creation mythology, it's laid out as sort of a teaching story with the hero twins. And in my recent book, The 2012 Story, I explained how the Maya creation myth basically is expressing what the Maya believed would happen at any cycle ending. And sure enough, we look around us in the world today, and that very thing seems to be going on. So I've taken this larger point of view, and I do personally agree with this and believe this, but I do believe it's an expression of what the ancient Maya were thinking about, is that the world is going through a crisis. It's caused by fundamentally a spiritual crisis within the heart of humanity. What we might say that's the collective heart of humanity or individuals, you know, but yeah. It has to do with the dynamic between two ways of seeing the world. One is from the vantage point of egoism and self-interest and greed. And then the other is from the vantage point of, you might say, the higher mind or the unity consciousness, that consciousness that understands that all things are interdependent and decisions we make affect other people and you know, even generations down the road. So the teaching of the creation myth, which goes into this through the deity figures like Seven Macaw, the vain and false ruler who appears at the end of the cycle and deceives humanity, these archetypal dynamics are indeed unfolding in our world today, and therefore, I don't want the study of 2012 to be limited to just an academic reconstruction. You know, what that can be done, that can be pursued on its own terms with, mm-hmm. you know, documentation and evidence and all that stuff. I mean, I can do that, and I have done that, but there is this larger sort of consideration that has a fair amount of urgency to it, and I think that the Maya traditions do speak to that. So I've been an advocate for, you know, presenting these things from a more like spiritual teachings point of view.
Very good. Now, yeah, of course, as you said, we're focusing in on a period. It's more over, as you said, maybe over 30 years or something like that, really, where we're in this period right now, and we're in the middle of it right now, of course. But there is still the question of why they ended it where they did, I guess. And have in your work and your research, have you come any closer to why then they picked this? And also, I guess, what that means. Does that mean that the abilities to, I guess, see beyond this point was pretty much a moot point? It was impossible for them to do, since they measured qualities of time and what different epochs would mean, and what kind of energy, I guess, they would carry. But after this point, did they just give up on trying, or was it something with their understanding that shifted? What do you think?
Oh, I think that they believed that 2012, you know, with the alignment coordinated with it, would be a great opportunity for transformation and renewal. The crisis sort of demands it, and so they, I think, the ancient, you know, the people at Azapa, put this long count calendar in place, and then it filtered out into the Maya civilization. And, you know, in fact, you know, 1,000 years of a calendar tradition, a lot can happen during that time, and the original intentions get lost, and other motivations and agendas come into play and stuff like that. So, you know, we can't even say that the Maya of the late classic period in 900 AD really understood anything about the true origins of the long count calendar that they were still following, considering that it had been put into place a millennia earlier. So there's those kinds of considerations too. But I think what I try to do is go to the core of the tradition, where it's undiluted and undistorted. That's why my studies have focused on Azapa. But nevertheless, we do find echoes of it in the Tortuguero monument, which is 7th century AD. It seems like the paradigm of renewal for 2012 was basically still in place, as well as an awareness of that there would be this alignment in 2012. That seems to be evident from the inscriptions that Lord Jaguar from Tortuguero put on that 2012 monument. But it's a cyclic time philosophy, so one would have to, you know, basically the 13 Bakhtun cycle would be considered one world age. And there is the world age doctrine that is, you know, preserved and recorded in the Popol Vuh creation myth. It goes back to pre-conquest ideas, the world age doctrine. And so it's basically, the assumption is that, you know, we go on into the next world age, and there's a total of 5 world ages. And interestingly enough, the 13 Bakhtun period is some 5,125 years. So multiply that by 5 and you get a really good estimate of the 26,000 year precessional cycle. So it's all a cyclic thing, and you know, the calendar doesn't end in 2012. It wasn't intended to end in 2012. It recycles back to the beginning, and it starts counting again. At other times, other Maya kings used the 20 Bakhtun cycle. You know, they had their own reasons for doing that. I mean, you could do a lot of manipulating and altering of the orthodox material for your, you know, whatever you needed to do for that. Like Pakal from Palenque, he referenced the 20 Bakhtun ending, and there's reasons for that. It doesn't disrupt the original integrity that was intended for the 13 Bakhtun cycle. But I think that, you know, part of this whole discussion is again, it's like an open-ended thing. You know, we can't say for certain what is supposed to happen or what's going to happen. I'm sort of an advocate for human beings engaging the process of transformation wherever we find ourselves. Right. I think perhaps the Maya believed there was a maximized a time of opportunity for engaging transformation and renewal, like when it's, you know, most appropriate to do that. So I think that we are at sort of a crisis, and that's precisely when we need to engage these processes of transformation and renewal. And how to do that is alluded to in the creation myth. So there's really a full package thing there that can be talked about. Yeah.
Very good. Now, there's been a lot of material surrounding this, a lot of different interpretations. We hear also different, voices, if you will, from within the modern Maya community, and they have different takes on this as well. I mean, even the Mexican government mm-hmm. have allegedly got involved in this by releasing some data. It happened a while back. There was alleged connections to aliens and other state-held secrets, they said, about the Mayan calendar that they, you know, pinned down in one of the documentaries that was released. How much credence do you put in all of this, and also taking into account what the modern Maya is saying today about this? Do you feel that it's all kind of legitimate and it's all good info that we should look at, or do you think there's a lot of sensationalizing going on around the calendar end date, John?
Absolutely. Yeah, there's a lot of sensationalizing going on, and most of the things that you mentioned can be explained as exploiting a sensationalist sort of attitude, doomsday, fear-based, or, you know, ancient aliens or something like that. I mean, I can look at every one of the examples that's been presented. For example, the so-called releasing of secret state, you know, state-held secrets by the Mexican government, that there was 3,000 artifacts that were going to prove that the ancient Maya were visited by space aliens, and 2012 they're going to return. I mean, this just goes back to the X-Files series, you know, that ended many, many years ago, but its culminating episode ended with December 21st, 2012.
That's right.
When the aliens are returning. Yep. So it's a sci-fi cliche. And the thing is about the movie that you're referencing, I started seeing that, that movie being promoted probably a year and a half ago, and it's kind of fallen off the map. I haven't heard anything else about it. But really? What's that?
Oh, really? Yeah, I was just going to ask you, because I haven't heard anything either about that documentary that was going to come out.
Well, the reason why is because the excitement was intended to generate investment of money into the production of the film. And somehow the director of that, who I believe is the son of the actor Raul Julia, he was able to find some associates inside of the Mexican government, I guess, to just agree to the plan, the promotional plan. Otherwise, I wouldn't think that he'd be able to say those things without some kind of, green light, go ahead. Mm. Well, the Mexican government would have a vested interest in generating excitement about 2012 for tourism.
Yeah.
So they had their own sort of ideas. Okay, so this is all speculative on my part. I'm not asserting anything with certainty, but that's pretty typical of the kinds of things that have happened. And yeah, the bottom line is that there's a lot of people who have exploited 2012 from the doomsday perspective in ways that have absolutely no understanding of the of the Maya tradition really, or any interest in trying to get to the heart of what the ancient Maya thought about this. So the second part of your question involved the modern Maya and what they say, and that's a fairly interesting thing. First of all, it has to be said that the 260-day calendar, the Dzogchen, still survives in the highlands of Guatemala among traditional groups of daykeepers mm-hmm. or spiritual guides, as they like to refer to themselves. I've done work with many different Maya groups and different spiritual guides with the nonprofit Maya Conservancy. We've brought Maya people to the sites to do ceremony and izapa and so on. So I've been a great advocate for the accurate accounting of the surviving 260-day calendar. That is an unbroken calendar going back probably 3,000 years. But the long count that gives us the 2012 date was fragmented and forgotten centuries ago. So the ideas and the statements about 2012 that modern Maya leaders might make are largely influenced by the milieu of books and writings on it that one finds in the marketplace. And of course, we know that that's pretty much a mess. So you're going to get the same kind of spectrum of ideas among a large section of commentators, Maya commentators, on 2012 that you find everywhere else. But there's something that's emerged that's very interesting in this whole thing, is that there is a core idea with 2012 that I think has been preserved, because it's a period ending. And the modern Maya, they still practice ceremonial ritual at period endings in their other calendar. So they have they've retained an idea about what happens at a period ending. And for them, transformation and renewal. They do fire ceremony. They do sacrifices into the fire. They're intending to engage the process of transformation so that they can renew into the next period. It might just be a year period. It might be a 260-day period. It's not any of the periods with the long count, but the idea is retained. And because of that, some of the smarter Maya guides have understood that, 2012, this thing that comes from our ancient ancestors, it's the end of a great period in this other calendar that we're just relearning about now, the long count. Well, a period ending, that must be about renewal. So the spiritual guides are also coming out with this interpretation that 2012 is about transformation and renewal. And I think that is absolutely congruent with the way that their ancient ancestors thought about it. So that's something that came out in a couple of in the film recently that I've been involved in. And so there's some really interesting things going on among the modern Maya voices, and there does seem to be a renaissance of Maya culture happening.
Let's talk a little bit more about the film. I want to ask you about the book as well. We're going to take a break here in about 5-10 minutes or so, but let's talk about the new things. And of course, you have an upcoming conference we want to give out as well. But what about the movie? Let's begin there. What are some of the other items in there that you would like to talk about?
Oh, great. Yeah, thank you. Because it's the film is called 2012: The Beginning. It was directed by Shannon Pring Bussett, and it was funded independently. So it didn't have to, answer to the Dean Counters at the History Channel or something like that. It has to be said that my experience has been over many years that the mainstream media, even the documentary places that you might expect would have a more straightforward presentation on 2012, like National Geographic and places like that, they've really gone, with the doomsday perspective on 2012, and
sure,
of course that's all about money and so on. So I was very happy for this film. Shannon contacted me probably about 3 years ago, and we began talking about it and what she wanted to do. And she also understood that there was just a lot of disinformation out there. She'd been spending time in Honduras and Central America, so she knew that the Maya weren't thinking that way about it. And she got the process rolling, and the film that she produced came out earlier this year. It was the most watched documentary film at the Cannes Film Festival, and we've done showings of it around the world now. We just got back, in fact, from Honduras and Canada, and I did an earlier showing in Brazil. I just did one in Colorado, and it's getting picked up by a lot of European countries for broadcast. Strangely enough, though, it's been very difficult to get it picked up here in the United States by any of the primetime cable stations. Mm. Very, very interesting, because the film basically, broadly speaking, it has two approaches. One is to give voice to the work that's been done to reconstruct what the ancient Maya actually thought about 2012. So from that vantage point, there is a focus on my work. There's also a focus on the Tortuguero Monument 6 inscription, which Maya scholars have now deciphered, and there's really important work being done by a veteran Maya scholar named Barbara McLeod. She's in the film, and a scholar named Michael Grof, who I actually worked with Michael on the Tortuguero inscription, and we've identified astronomical things going on with the dates, and so Michael's in it too. So there is this sort of like focus on, let's give a fair and accurate hearing to this, basically my 2012 alignment theory. And there's, you know, some critical responses and critiques and stuff like that, but at least it's a fair hearing.
Sure.
And I think a lot of the scholars are coming around to acknowledge that there's, you know, have an accurate understanding of what it is that I've actually been saying in my work. So the second approach also of the film is very much appreciated, and that is that Shannon went around and interviewed modern Maya leaders and spiritual guides and was able to you know, get their perspectives on this, because they now understand that 2012 is part of their heritage. And not to have any spoilers, but it's quite heartening to find that those who are thinking about it and connecting it up with you know, their ancient traditions are you know, they acknowledge basically that it is an opportunity for transformation and renewal, but it is something that we as human beings need to consciously and intentionally engage. So without any interference on my own part in terms of what they're saying, you know, I wasn't even that familiar with the particular spiritual leaders that Shannon interviewed. They're actually sort of echoing the same reconstruction that I came up with, you know, working in the 90s. So it's all coming together very nicely. Right at the 11th hour here, and 2012, the beginning, is now available. You know, it can be found if people go to alignment2012.com, my website, they can find it there. But the thing is that's really great. What Shannon really did also is that she designed this amazing conference, she invited me and Barb McLeod and Michael Grof and David Sadat and a lot of the other people involved in the film to be at this conference that we're doing in Copan. So that's where I'm going to be on December 21st, Copan, Honduras, the amazing classic Maya site. And so that's December 18th through the 22nd. So I'm really, really happy to be there and looking forward to it.
All right, very good. We're, of course, going to have links up to this. It'll be still a little bit time for you guys out there to check that out. And as you said, you had have links as well from your website. Let's give out your websites. And again, mention the title, of course, of your new book as well that you have out now, John.
Oh, yeah, thanks. Well, the main website has always been alignment2012.com, alignment2012.com. I've got other websites. The one that sort of pulls together all of the critique against my work and my responses to critics is called update2012.com. There's a lot of, you know, real tedious kind of back and forth there, but it needed to be done. But that's where a lot of the critiques can be found, update2012.com. The site that I really recommend for the late breaking, you know, work and all the latest discoveries is the Center for 2012 Studies. And that's just like it sounds, the Center for 2012 Studies.com. Probably could just be Googled too, but I've got about 25 essays up there now, including one that I posted just yesterday, which is a response to a scholarly paper that came out a couple of days ago about the correlation question. So it's fairly, you know, academic stuff, but that site is dedicated to the ongoing work and the increasing evidence in Maya astronomy and Maya traditions for understanding 2012. So I'd say it's pretty much those three main websites.
All right, very good. There's a lot of 2012 websites here, of course, to give out. Let me mention a few of them here again. 2012thebeginning.com for the movie. And the we also have the 2012 story, by the way, for your previous book on the subject. And we have, of course, update2012.com, the Center for 2012 Studies. But I would say if you just recall alignment2012.com, you can get to most of these sites from there, of course. And again, we're, of course, going to have these up on redicecreations.com, so you can click your way through all of these here. And, of course, shortly here, briefly before we take a break, Reconstructing Ancient Maya Astronomy, the Field of 2012 Studies in 2012. Is this an ebook, a hardback? What is it?
Yeah. I'm glad I'm going to mention that because this I haven't been able to get a lot of my stuff on the ebook. I think there are two available on Kindle, which is good. But this most recent book, Reconstructing Ancient Maya Astronomy, is something I produced myself just last month, and it's basically a booklet, and I offer it on my website as a package with my 3-CD audio program called Unlocking the Secrets of 2012, or people can just buy the booklet. But this has all of the late-breaking stuff with the recent 2012 inscription from La Corona, as well as the discovery of the tomb of Lady Cabal, and a couple other things too. So I felt that book needed to get out. It was part of a long, long essay that I was writing for the New England Antiquities Research Association, and the article just kind of grew and grew and grew, and so I decided to turn it into a small book instead. That's available. People can find a link for it on alignment2012.com.
All right, very good. We're going to get into some of the new material here, of course, but we'll take a short break. So we'll be right back with more. Stay with us, guys. have another hour coming up with John for our subscribers. You can read more on how to acquire a membership on redicemembers.com. It's quick and it's easy, and you'll get full access to our archives. And in the second hour, we'll discuss Mayan astronomy, symbolism, and inscriptions that reference the 2012 date. John speaks about shared knowledge between ancient cultures arising from shamanic consciousness. Then we'll talk about what's after 2012. Jenkins shares his last comments as 2012 comes to an end and we begin to leave this subject behind. I would also say don't miss our roundtable on 2012 and solar cataclysm with Jay Widener, Barbara Hand Clough, and Lawrence Joseph in about a week from now. Before that, we'll talk with G. Edward Griffin about the collectivist conspiracy. Thank you for listening. We'll be right back after a short break with John Major Jenkins. We'll be right back.